Welcome back to another episode of Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. I'm your host, Bobby Kaler. On this podcast, we explore all things related to thriving and flourishing in life. There are three fundamental truths that inform not just my podcast, but my coaching as well. And they are, number one, the future can be changed. You are not stuck and you are not trapped by your predictable future. Wherever you are right now, it's just your present state. It does not determine where you can go in life. Fundamental truth number two, you can change your future. This might be the best news of all. You don't need to be rescued by someone else. You can do that for yourself. In other words, you can be your own hero. And fundamental truth number three, you do not have to wait. Too many people think that they have to have the perfect plan or all the knowledge or all the skills before they can get started. Nothing is further from the truth. I've coached a lot of people in my career, and trust me when I say that you can learn whatever it is that you need to learn along the way. The key is to start. If you've listened to the podcast before, you'll probably know that we find stories and experts who shed light on these different areas so that we can all flourish and thrive. Let's dive in to today's episode. Before introducing this week's guest, just want to give you a quick reminder that we've launched a new segment of the Unyielded podcast. The new segment is called Rise and Thrive. They come out on Mondays, they're super short, and they are intended to be fuel for you, your week, and your life. So please check them out, and I truly hope that they add value to your week and to your life. My guest today calls himself a delusional optimist. But before you dismiss him as a modern-day Pollyanna or someone who has always had it easy, you might want to know that when he was 18, he was diagnosed with a life-shortening disease, and he was told that he'd only live to be 30 years old. Also, he was told that he'd never be able to be an athlete and he'd never be able to have biological children. Instead, he built an award-winning career, and he has accomplished physical feats unimaginable for medical experts, including an ultramarathon. And he's also the father of two amazing sons. He's now 38 years old. Through his podcast and speaking, he aims to build a world in which every individual sees themselves as the hero of their own story, has the courage to turn that story into reality, and the confidence to share it with the world. His name is Ryan Shekel, and I can't wait for you to hear his story. Ryan, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, Bobby, thank you so much for having me. It's a privilege to be here with you.
Oh, man, I've been looking forward to this. So let's dive right in because you have an interesting story. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
I'd love to. So I shouldn't really be here. I shouldn't have my career. I shouldn't have my family. I shouldn't be alive. And at 18 years old, I was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis, which is a chronic and life-shortening lung disease that only 70,000 people in the world have. And when I was diagnosed, I was actually told that I'd only live to be 30 years old because that was the average lifespan.
Man.
18, 20 years ago when I was diagnosed with this disease. And because of CF, I was also told that I'd never have my own biological children. So, you know, 3 years into my career, I wanted to make a change and really grow my career. And I was told that I also didn't fit the sales profile. So there's all of these shouldn'ts, right, that have been going on in my life. And now at 38 years old, I've lived 8 years longer than I was supposed to, that diagnosis of 30. I've got two amazing sons that are just the love of my life. I've built an award-winning sales and management career, and I've accomplished some physical feats that my doctors or anyone else wouldn't imagine that someone with cystic fibrosis could actually accomplish. I played baseball at the collegiate level. I ran an ultra marathon with less than 70% lung function. So it's been a journey to get to this point in my life, to say the least.
Yeah. So you got the two kids. You taught one of your boys water skiing over the weekend, because we were talking about that ahead of time. And I was thinking about that. You were out there treading water, helping him. So does it limit you in any way at this point, Ryan?
So, you know, it's like anything, but it limits me in comparison to where I could be. More so than, I don't really like to compare myself to anyone else.
Yeah.
I've always been of the mentality that the only comparison you should make is to yourself yesterday. And that kind of gives you that accountability to just better yourself daily. But it does limit me. And think about what 70% lung function is. And I'll even walk that back, because that was my lung function recently. But as of 2 years ago, I watched my lung function steadily decline. When I was diagnosed at 18 years old, it was at 70%. And I watched it slowly decline over the course of 18 years, down to under 40% 2 years ago. And 70% lung function is like a long-term smoker with a COPD diagnosis. And 40% lung function is where your doctors start talking about getting a lung transplant, a double lung transplant. And that's where I was 2 years ago. So, I mean, you know, you ask, like, does it affect me? Well, 40% lung functions, it could be pretty hard. And like, what's it feel like to not be able to breathe? You know, I was actually thinking about this the other day. I was thinking, man, what did it feel like to have 40% lung function? And it brought me back to some of the things that I love to do. And it's like play recreational sports. It's go for a run or work out. It's go to a comedy event and laugh. And all these things were harder. They were harder. Like, I couldn't just go outside and run. I'd start coughing all the time. If I wanted to go, like, one of my favorite things with my wife was to go to a comedy event, right? To go see stand-up. Yeah. And if I laughed too hard, I wouldn't be able to breathe, and I would just start coughing. So it really does affect how much you can breathe. But I was fortunate to get on a medication a couple years ago that really helped me to kind of bring my function back up to where it was in high school. So right now I feel great, even at 70%, because compared to where I was 2 years ago, it's significantly better.
It's almost twice as good as 2 years ago. You know, and it's not the same like at all, but I used to have asthma, and I remember some of those times, like, you know, when I'd have a real episode and I'd be taken to the hospital, and it is scary when you cannot bring air into your lungs. That's a scary, scary feeling. So I was going to ask you what happened 2 years ago. So it sounds like it was a new medication.
Yeah, it was really amazing. So for the past probably, let's say 5+ years, there's been kind of like this magic, quote, medication that has been being researched by specifically the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, and some pharmaceutical companies have really made a very strong effort into creating it and bringing it to fruition. And what it does is it actually takes the genetic makeup of the disease and it flips the genes in your cells at a cellular, at a molecular level.
Wow.
And all it is a pill. And this is the future of medicine in a lot of ways, are these gene-modifying drugs. And cystic fibrosis is one of the first diseases to really benefit from this novel medication that is coming out for a lot of different diseases.
Yeah.
And fortunately, I was able, right at the beginning of the COVID pandemic, I was able to get on this medication, and it did wonders for my lungs. And it really allowed me to go from, you know, not being able to finish a workout without struggling and coughing through it to, you know, like I said, training for and completing an ultra marathon with 70% lung function.
Yeah. When did you complete the marathon?
So I completed it, let's see, so it will be a year in October.
Wow.
So I actually got on this medication a year ago in March, and it was immediately within 3 weeks, I could tell that my life was going to be different. And I wanted to raise money for the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, because they've done so much for patients struggling with cystic fibrosis. I mean, they've not only funded a lot of this research, but they've actually, I remember in the hospital when I was younger, they would have all these like goodie bags sent to us, and they'd be filled with Ensure and candy and t-shirts, just everything that like a kid needs in the hospital to kind of like work on just their happiness, but also their health. So I've always been really supportive. I wanted to give back and raise some money for the foundation that benefited me so much. So I decided that I was going to run a 50 kilometer race, given my newfound lung function. And I've trained for 9 months. And I started in March. I ran 1,000 miles over the course of the summer. Ooh. And I completed it on, I believe it was October 10th of 2020.
Wow. Unbelievable. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, that's exciting. So, okay. So you're 18, you get this diagnosis, but you still went on to play college baseball. So was there, how did that come about?
So I always enjoyed sports. I grew up in a family that my father was a great role model to me. He played sports. It was just something that I always felt really good about. I was good at them in a sense that I had really good hand-eye coordination. So I could shoot a basketball. I could hit and throw a baseball. A lot of that I was just naturally somewhat gifted at. The physical part of it, I was never a physical specimen by any means. I actually graduated high school 6'3" and 153 pounds. I was a rail. If I was playing basketball and I went up for a rebound and there was a draft in the building, I feel like it would move me in the air, you know?
Right.
But I grew up in like a small farm town in upstate New York. And we didn't have a lot of kids in our school that played sports. And we had a fair amount, but I was fortunate that it wasn't like this big powerhouse school. So I was able to play sports. And one of the things that I was able to do was I could throw a baseball pretty hard. And because of that, I got some looks to play Division III college baseball. And it was an opportunity that I wasn't going to pass up. I really loved sports growing up. And it was a great opportunity for me to do something that a lot of people didn't imagine that, you know, someone with a pre-existing condition was able to do. And it was that summer right after my senior year that I went into college and played baseball. And that was the year I was diagnosed. And that was the first year that I really got medication to treat the disease that had been affecting me my entire life. So I went into my freshman year of college and I was in the best shape physically that I had ever been in because I had just gotten out of 2 weeks in the hospital of having an IV hooked up with medication flowing through my veins to finally start work some of the disease out of my lung. And while I wasn't, you know, at the same physical level that my peers were in college, I felt good for myself. And I was able to really just compete on kind of work ethic alone.
Yep. And now, so did it ever like, did you ever think that diagnosis or the prognosis, did it ever make you think, oh, I can't play ball? I can't do this?
So, you know, it's funny that you asked that. And I don't know if it was just a naivete of being 18 years old and thinking that you can conquer the world. But, you know, I do attribute a lot of the success that I've seen in my life and a lot of just the overcoming adversity to a specific mindset. And I call that mindset a delusional optimist mindset.
You have to tell me more.
So the idea of the delusional optimist mindset is that I believe no matter what, I can do anything. And it stems from a couple different things. But I think there's different people that you have in your life that make up your network. Some people call it an inner circle. And I grew up with a lot of cheerleaders in my life. My parents were cheerleaders. They told me all the time, you could do anything you want. What do you want to be? You can do it. You know, you're capable of anything, right? And no matter what, it didn't matter that I was 6'3", 153 pounds. They would have told me I was going to be a professional weightlifter, you know?
Yeah.
They were cheerleaders, and that's good to have. Like, those are valuable because they give you self-esteem. They give you confidence. They give you optimism. And at the same time, there's other folks in your life that I think are challengers in a way, right? And these are the people that tell you can't do anything. And some people, these are their parents. These are the people they grew up with in their house. It may be uncles or grandparents that are just negative all the time. So you can't do that. You can't go to the NBA. There's no way you're going to play basketball. You can't play college baseball. You have a disease. Mm-hmm. And these challengers, they identify struggles and challenges for you so that you understand what you can overcome. But then there's also other people in your life that are champions. And I think you need to seek out champions, because what a champion does for you is they can be a cheerleader when you need encouragement. They can be a challenger when you maybe have too much ego or you're overconfident. But what they do at the core is they help you bring you to where you can be. So at the core of this delusional optimist mindset is I think you have to believe that you're capable of anything, but you also have to be delusional in that you're disregarding the obstacles that are in the way because you've built a network with champions in your life to help you achieve the things that you want to be able to achieve.
Yeah, I like that because we all need the champions. You know,
yes.
And sometimes people are way out of balance. You know, some people just have cheerleaders and then some people only have challengers, you know, so that blend can be valuable.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think that's where a lot of people get hung up on their childhood oftentimes. Mm. Like I could look at my childhood and I could say, in a way, I lacked some challengers. And because of that, maybe I had a little bit of ego that was not in line with my capabilities. But at the same time, there's a lot of people that grow up with only challengers. And what that does is it grounds them really well. And it can stoke a fire in you to prove people wrong, which is a great thing to have. Mm-hmm. But they're lacking sometimes that cheerleader. And what happens there is there's going to be a point in time where their confidence falters and they may not choose to continue on because they don't have someone in their corner pushing them.
Yep.
And you know, that's where that champion that can do both is so helpful. And I think you have to seek out those people in your life.
Yeah. Well, that brings up a great point. How do you seek those people out?
I think there's going to be a lot of times in your life where you just meet different people. And I think that takes a lot of self-reflection to understand who you have in your circle, who you have in your corner, who each of these people in your life are. And I think sometimes you kind of know without having to do that reflection. Like if someone's always tearing you down, they're a challenger. And if someone never gives you constructive feedback, they're a cheerleader. But so the person in your life that you go to for advice, the person that you call, and you generally know who they are, if you're calling one person to have a real conversation, to share your like inner thoughts with, that's your champion. And if you don't have someone like that, they're all over. But I think you have to push yourself out of your comfort zone to experience different things and find them. And you also have to go out and talk to different people, whether it be teachers, whether it be role models digitally that you see online, reach out to them. You know, social media is a great place in a lot of ways because it makes people accessible. And it's a negative place in a lot of ways because, you know, it's kind of people putting out their best or their worst for the world. So there's always going to be people, but I think getting yourself out of your comfort zone and experiencing as many different experiences is the best way to find people for your network that you're going to kind of really have commonality with.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think it takes a certain amount of maybe vulnerability, and that comes with the comfort zone, right? Because sometimes you have to be vulnerable enough to say, hey, I don't have all the answers here, you know, that can be powerful. So with the delusional optimist, that mindset, I love that. That seems like one of the things that helped you overcome adversity. What are some of the other things that you would say contributed to overcoming the adversity that you faced?
Yeah. So just to underscore the importance of the champion in your life, I met my wife when I was graduating from college. And there was something about the relationship that I had with her when I really first met her that it wasn't like this girlfriend that was, you know, I was just infatuated with. Like we had a very deep, meaningful relationship from the beginning. And I could tell that having someone like that in my life was going to be the impetus that would help me achieve greatness because she wasn't going to settle for our relationship for us to be average. And that's the type of person that I think when you find that person, hang on to them. because it's so valuable, whether it's your wife or your best friend or a mentor at work. Like, that was one of the reasons that I attribute a lot of my success to her for that reason. But there's a lot of other kind of, I guess, characteristics that I could point to. And I think it's just like, look, never giving up. There's parts of having cystic fibrosis and a lung disease where it's really easy to just give up, you know? But when you're living with something and you can't get away from it, you just don't have that option.
No.
And that fortitude is so important to have. And one of the things that I attribute the ability to persevere from is creating situations in my life that force me on a daily basis to practice fortitude and to overcome adversity. So I think physical fitness is one of the most important things you could do to practice overcoming adversity. And for me personally, I think doing it early in the morning is the most beneficial thing you could do. So, you know, you talk, I don't know if you've read the book Atomic Habits by James Clear.
I've heard of it, have not read it yet.
It's a great book. And it starts with this story about like this 1% aggregation of success and how it compounds over time, right? And I love this idea because if you can start your day with success, then the rest of your day just falls in line as these dominoes of success kind of crumble down on each other.
Yeah.
So the first thing that I like to do is I think everyone should set their alarm for earlier than they want to wake up. And that does a number of things for you. A, it starts your day early and helps you get the most done that you can do in 24 hours. But B, if you set your alarm before you want to get up, when that alarm goes off, don't question it. Don't hit snooze. Get out of bed. Period. You just started your day with a win. You didn't want to do something. It was painful. Your bed is warm and comfy. And that air outside is cold, right? Like you're not under the covers anymore. But you just beat your alarm clock. You've now started your day with a win. That's the easiest thing anyone can do. And it is a win every single day. So now you're 1% better than you were when you woke up. So what are you going to do with the rest of your day?
Yeah. Well, tell me, Ryan, I'm intrigued when you said you create those daily experiences that, what'd you say, force you to practice that fortitude. And yeah. When you said that immediately, because you were talking about the physical activity, sports, whatever, I was thinking about the bike ride. I was telling you about how you're breaking through that barrier and man, something just that just really resonated for me. So could you give me an example of like how you do that for yourself?
Yeah. So outside of waking up, which again, first and foremost, it's the most important thing. You know, physical activity is usually a really good way to explain it. So I'll give you a physical example and then I'll try to give you like a work example as well. Okay.
Perfect.
So I live in a neighborhood and our neighborhood, we live in an area called Honeyoy Falls, which is, you know, if there's falls, there's hills, right? Because we have this little creek that has a waterfall in it. And there's a lot of hills in our neighborhood. It's a lot of rolling hills. And our house in our neighborhood is kind of at the top of one of these hills. It's not anything special. It's just higher than the rest of the neighborhood or the rest of the area. So what I like to do is I like to actually set up my runs. Now that I have sort of tried to incorporate running into my daily workouts, I try to set up my runs to where I start my run going down the hill, go for however long I need to go. And that way, when I'm done with my run, I know I'm finishing it coming up a hill. And the hill that comes up to my house is about a half a mile long and it's pretty steep. So no matter what it is, if I schedule myself a 4 mile run, an 8 mile run, a 10 mile run, it doesn't matter how long it is. I know that the last half mile of that run is uphill and it's gonna suck. It sucks every time. Like running up a hill is never fun. I don't care how good you are at running. So what happens is, in my head, I'm rationalizing not running up the hill every day. It's not like every single day I know it's coming. I get to the bottom of this hill and whether I went 3, 6, 10 miles, I could rationalize at the end of 10 miles, like if you run 9.5 miles, you could say, you know what? I just did 9.5 miles. I'm pretty tired. I lifted legs yesterday. Like I could walk up this hill because that doesn't feel good, right? Mm-hmm. But you're making an excuse and you know you scheduled 10 miles. You have to run up that hill. So I've scheduled it into my workout to know that no matter how far I go, I'm ending up a hill. So I'm practicing overcoming what my mind is telling me I don't need to do. I've scheduled it. I know it's coming. And now it sucks too because I'm anticipating it. And I'm like, oh, and now every day, and I'm like, oh, well, I know this is going to suck right at the end of my workout. And it's even like more dreadful. And I'm going to be honest with you. Some days I walk up the hill.
Yeah.
And I know that I've lost, you know? Oh. And it's regretful when I get to the top and it never feels good. But it always feels amazing no matter how long I've gone when I run up to the top.
Yeah.
So that's a great way to schedule adversity into a workout.
I love that.
So another thing that I do is I will, you know, a lot of people have a checklist of things, you know, they want to do throughout the day. And there's a lot of things in my workday where I'll make a checklist and have to check them off. But one of the things I also like to tell myself is, as a manager, I need to check in with people. And, you know, at the end of my day, I may be pulling into my driveway and know that my kids are waiting for me in my house. But I know that I need to call one person and check in with them and just see how their day went, see if they made any sales, see if they need any help. And it doesn't have to be anyone in particular, but I have to reach out to someone before I walk into the house. And or every single time that I call someone, they may not need anything, but they appreciate understanding that someone's thinking about them. Sometimes I won't even do it with a colleague. I'll just do it with someone that I haven't talked to in a long time, an old friend, and just reach out and say, hey, how you doing? You know, are things going well? I miss you. It's been a while. And understanding that I need to reach out to someone at the end of my day before I walk into the house really helps me to schedule in sometimes an uncomfortable conversation where I might not want to have it because, look, if someone really needs something, I'm going to really feel like obligated to help them. And, you know, I may want to be walking into my house and it's going to take time away from my family, but it's an uncomfortable thing to have to do something extra at the end of your day, but to schedule it in and to know that it's like overcoming that is a great practice kind of in your work schedule. And it may be that you have clients that you don't want to call to make a sales call for. And they're really miserable to talk to and they never buy anything. But forcing yourself to have those conversations, even understanding, knowing what the outcome might be, is practicing fortitude in your daily life so that when adversity, when big adversity comes, you've aggregated success and you understand how to approach the strategy to overcome it.
Yeah, I love that because I've been thinking about this a lot recently, how, you know, we always like we pray for strength or we pray or we ask for strength or peace, confidence, whatever it is. And the fact of the matter is those things are not bestowed. We have experiences that teach us those things, right? And that's kind of what I'm hearing you say there. And it's one way to, I think, be very intentional about building that. The other thing, Ryan, as I
listen, know what's interesting about that too, because the one thing you said there is like you know, people pray for strength. And I am religious and I do go to church, but I question this idea of prayer, not in that it's important or sometimes I question how we do it because I find myself kind of doing the same thing where I'm like praying for strength for whatever reason. There's something big, there's a big meeting, there's a big sale, there's a big presentation that might be coming up, and I will find myself praying for strength to get through it, praying for wisdom. But what I've realized is when you're praying for strength or when you're praying for wisdom and take God out of it and take religion out of it, you're relying on something external and you're asking for something to happen to you. And I really struggle with that because I think you need to take accountability for your actions to achieve your outcomes. So I don't like the idea of praying for something to happen to you. I like the idea of almost talking to yourself, praying to yourself when you take religion out of it and saying, Ryan, earn that strength. Like, what are you doing to earn the strength, to earn the preparation, to crush your presentation?
Yeah.
Like, no one else is going to come down out of the sky and help you prepare. Like, put in the work, put in the reps, and then you don't have to pray to anyone.
Yeah.
And make it happen. And it's this kind of inner struggle that I have sometimes, understanding that, you know, there may be a higher power that can help, but it's like, you know what? Whether that power helps or not, the only thing that you can do is control your actions and your preparation.
Yeah. It's so funny that you said that. Last Tuesday, because I, you know, I grew up in a religious family. I pray, I believe in a higher power. I believe in God. My dad still has his prayers that he says every night. He spends 15 to 30 minutes. He's 88 years old and he's got prayer time, you know. And last week, for whatever reason, I found myself, I was praying, I don't know, for something, strength, guidance, wisdom, don't remember. And I remember having this thought, like, why are you taking up his time? Like, he's giving you the experiences, make it happen. Like, because the other thing I was taught is, right, I don't know how you were taught it, but as a kid, it was always God helps those help themselves. So it's like, hey, he's giving you the experiences, go get it done. Stop waiting. And it was like, and then I kind of felt bad. I felt this real internal tension around, oh my goodness, God's going to think I'm just sitting down here. You know, what did I say? I was being, I can't remember the word I used, but like, I'm not trying to just sit around and moan and groan or something.
Yeah,
like, I'm so glad I'm not the only one that has those types of thoughts.
Yeah. Well, to an extent, it almost feels narcissistic in a way.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, I could do this myself. And it's not that you can do it yourself. But like, I work with someone who uses the phrase all the time, control the controllables.
That's right.
And there's only certain things that are in your control. And everything else is external. And whether it happens or not, and sometimes that's the result of your effort too, right? Like, you may put in all the work you can put in. You may prepare for hours and hours and hours for whatever it is you're trying to prepare for. And you know what? You might not succeed. Like, the result of all of that effort may be failure. But I truly believe failure is the inability to start again.
That's right.
So, you know, it may be a setback, but that's just, you know, an externality. And your success is waking up on a daily basis, putting in the work, and doing everything you can in your controllables to get everything done.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I actually... You know, I've got this other theory about this, and I'd be interested, you know, to kind of get your thoughts on this. But I feel very strongly about this delusional optimist mindset that I've kind of coined for my mindset, I guess. And it's important to understand that while I'm very optimistic, I believe that success is inevitable no matter what I do because of the work that I put in. It goes back to what we're just talking about. My father, a couple years ago, was diagnosed with brain cancer.
Ooh.
And he was a role model to me. He was very optimistic. I believe we had a very similar mindset in life. We never discussed it, but I think I get a lot of my mindset from him. And when he was diagnosed with brain cancer, he said the same thing. He said, you know what? I'm going to beat this. I can do it. I understand what they're saying about it, but not me. I am going to beat this. I'm going to fight it and I am going to win. And you know what? He died in 6 months.
Ooh.
So it's, while you may be optimistic, you can be delusional because there's certain things in your life that you're going to encounter that you may not be able to overcome. And it's like what I was saying, that's not important because you can't control the outcome sometimes.
No.
He fought every single day of his life to have the best possible last couple months he could have. And did he hope that he was going to survive forever? Yeah, he did. But it didn't matter because he made the most of the time he had.
Yeah.
And all that mattered was that he put in the work and he was the model for so many people to say, yeah, you know, it doesn't matter what the outcome is sometimes. All you can do is control your outlook, your perspective, and your effort. And, you know, that's what life is. You just make the most of every breath you have.
That's right. And here's the thing about your dad too, right? What in that case, what's winning is it, because it sounds like in a way he did win by enjoying every last moment that he had. that is a win. You know, years ago, God, I haven't thought about this in years, Ryan. Years and years ago, I was in my late 20s and I was going through some stuff, right? And I was talking to, it was at my at the time, it was my boyfriend and his father. His father's name was Fred, and Fred was like a father figure to me as well. And I was talking to Fred about it. And Fred said something like, this current adversity is there to reveal, you know, part of your soul. Like it's to help you develop the next part of your soul or something like that. And he was talking about how he thinks that he thought that adversity, that's kind of why it's put there, right? It's that next thing that we need to learn. And so I've always kind of hung on to that a little bit. Like, so when I'm facing adversity, sometimes, you know, going back to the prayer, I'll even pray and I'll say, I don't know why it's here, like, but I trust that there's something you want me to learn from this. There's some kind of growth that you want me to have from this experience. So thank you. And, and then sometimes I'm like, can you guide me a little bit? Thank you.
Yes. It's funny because you're absolutely right. And one of the things that I find myself when I sit down for prayers, and this is more and more commonly, what I will say instead of asking for anything is I'll just say thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for whatever it is that's in my life right now.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, Bobby, to know if you believe or if you have seen anyone that has achieved greatness without a giant hurdle or some form of massive adversity in front of them.
I don't know if I can think of one off the top of my head. Can you?
I've thought a lot about it for a long time, and I can't think of anybody.
No.
Anybody. So I would be hard pressed to believe that adversity is even a bad thing in a lot of ways.
I think it's
necessary for growth. It's necessary for greatness. And I was actually asked recently, I forget exactly how it came up, but someone asked me how I felt now that I'm pretty public about my disease of cystic fibrosis, how I felt being defined by someone with cystic fibrosis. And I kind of thought about that because I never wanted to be defined as anyone with cystic fibrosis.
Yeah.
I hid it for a long time. I didn't hide it in terms of like, I don't have it, but I wasn't forthcoming about it to the point where like when I went to college, like my mom called the school and got me a single for a dorm so that I could do my medication on a daily basis. Cause I had like lung therapy where I had to wear a vest that was shaking the phlegm out of my lungs. I had to do a nebulizer twice a day.
Yeah.
I take 7 pills with every single thing I eat. I just shove them in my mouth and take them so that I could digest food. So there was a lot of things I wasn't ashamed, but I didn't want it to be what people thought of me. So when he asked this question, I thought, you know, I'm pretty public with it now. I'll talk to anybody about it. I'm an open book. But I don't feel like I'm defined by someone with cystic fibrosis. But I totally fine being defined by the way that I have overcome it. And I am happy for people to look at me and say, that's Ryan Shekel. He's the guy who has cystic fibrosis and in spite of that, refused to allow it to beat him, went on and had an amazing career, had biological children when he was told he wouldn't because he was able to navigate the IVF process with his wife, and was 70% lung function because of that disease, ran a 50-kilometer ultra marathon, probably gasping for air the whole time, which I almost was. And I'm happy to be defined by that, and not the disease itself. And I think everyone should be looking for a way to define themselves in terms of overcoming the struggles that they have in their life. Because my struggles, they're mine. They're no different than anyone else's. My life's no harder than anyone else's. Everyone has struggles. And I truly believe that nobody wants to be average. No one desires to be average. But a lot of people don't know how to be great.
Yeah.
And it's that delusional optimist mindset. It's building an inner circle with your 3 C's, your cheerleaders, your challengers, and your champions. And it's practicing that fortitude on a daily basis so that you can overcome any adversity that you have in your life.
Yeah. I totally agree. And I love that. I'm fascinated by not the way you frame it. I don't want to be defined as someone with it. I want to be, you're fine being defined by how you overcame it.
Yeah.
What do you think the importance of that is, that distinction?
Well, I think it goes back to that accountability in a way. I think if you're defined by what you have, it's something happening to you. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm afflicted by this. I have this disease. It's a part of me. I didn't do that. Like, I didn't do something that caused me to have cystic fibrosis. I was born with it, you know? So why would I want to be defined by something I have no control of? Mm-hmm. I think everyone should want to be defined by something they can fully 100% control. And what you can control, well, you may not be able to control what happens to you. You can always control your reaction to it. So I think no matter what challenge you have in life, you should pursue that challenge and you should assume that people are judging you based on the way you approach overcoming that challenge. Because then you're going to be self-conscious about it and you're going to put the most effort into it and you'll end up getting the best result because of the focus you put on it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a lot to that. What it reminds me of is when I was in my undergrad, I think I might've shared this with you before, but there was some abuse in my childhood. And my professor kept saying, well, you are a victim of abuse. Mm. And I'm like, no, I experienced some abuse. I am not a victim of it. And to me, there was a something just incredibly important by that distinction.
Yeah.
Because I think when I say, if I say, oh, I'm a victim of something, I don't know, that doesn't feel good. Like, because then it's like, no, because there's always something I can do. You know what I mean?
Well, it's final.
Yeah.
In a way, right? Like being a victim would mean that it's done.
Yeah.
Like you were abused. It's over. Like you failed. It beat you.
Oh, it did not beat me.
I think that's what you're saying with that, right? Because it did not. And you've persevered. And I think I love the fact that you could say like, no, that's it's kind of like a buzzword that it's a hot topic, right? Being a victim. And I know that there's this whole victim mentality that people talk about, but no, you're not a victim. That's so final. Like it didn't defeat you. You're still fighting. Even if you're in the midst of something terrible happening in your life, you're not a victim. Like you have had a challenge.
That's right.
Like, look at that. Not as something that defeated you. Look at it as an opportunity. You now have an opportunity to overcome something.
Yeah.
And it's hard because there's really terrible things that happen. And Bobby, I mean, I would imagine, you know, the abuse you had was awful and it probably felt like the end of the world when you're going through it. But it's important to know that it wasn't.
And it wasn't.
If someone else that's listening to this is going through something and they really feel like they're going through something that seems as though it's the end of the world, like you can work your way out of it, but only you can.
Yeah.
And while you have the power to do it, only you have the power to do it. And whatever it takes, you need to do. And I truly feel like you first have to believe that you can. And that's that delusional optimism. Well, it doesn't feel like you can. And while others may say you can't, know that you can and find someone in your life to help you. And that victim mentality is terrible. And it's, you know who the true victim is the person that believes when other people say they're a victim.
Yeah.
Because it means they've already given up.
And I think that's the worst thing that can happen. You know, maybe not the worst thing, but it makes it worse when we give up hope, you know?
Yeah.
So I love the delusional optimist. Yeah, this has been great, Ryan. Well, I had no idea where this conversation was going to go, but I love it. So if people want to find out, tell us about your podcast too, and then where they can find you.
Well, Bobby, you were a recent guest and it's not out yet, but we recently spoke and you'll be on the Every Breath Counts podcast. And I decided a couple of years ago that I needed to have a overarching purpose to my life. And I was reading this book by Simon Sinek called The Infinite Game. And he talks about creating a just cause. I said, you know what? I think I could probably use a just cause. It might give me some great direction to kind of take my next 38 years now that I know that I'm going to be living forever, right? Yeah. And so I created a just cause for my life. And I decided that I wanted to pursue building a world in which every individual sees themselves as the hero of their own story, has the courage to turn that story into reality, and the confidence to share that story with the world. And to do that, I felt like I needed to serve other people in getting a message out that anything is possible. So I decided to start a podcast, and I interview inspirational people like yourself that have optimized their mind, their body, their career, and their life. And I've had some amazing guests. I've had CEOs, COOs. I had a mind reader. I've had professional athletes. I recently interviewed someone who will likely be going to the 2022 Olympics as long as he stays healthy and snowboarding. So all these people, ultra marathon runners, who've got these great stories of overcoming adversity and optimizing their life to live at their fullest potential. And it's been the joy of my career has been building this podcast and speaking to high performers about what makes them tick and what makes them successful. It's called the Every Breath Counts podcast. It's on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Overcast, wherever you might listen, wherever you're listening to this. And I would encourage anyone that wants to optimize their life, their health, their fitness, their career, to check it out. Every Breath Counts podcast. Hit subscribe. Send me a note. You can find me on social media at Every Breath Counts podcast. I'm most active on Instagram. You can find me on LinkedIn, Ryan Shuckle, and the website, everybreathcountspodcast.com.
Perfect. And we'll put all those in the show notes as well. Yeah, I love the mission of your podcast. I think we have similar missions in life, you know, and I love that.
I believe so.
That's probably why we like talking so much. So Ryan, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing all this and for the work that you're doing out there and the people that you're inspiring.
Oh, well, Bobby, thank you so much for having me. This was a pleasure and a privilege, and I really enjoy talking to you, and I know that we'll stay in touch.
Awesome. I always tell my guests in advance that I don't know where the conversation is going to go, and today was certainly no exception. I absolutely love hearing something come up in the conversation that's intriguing and then following it to see where we go. I hope that you enjoyed it as well. Here are my three insights for thriving. Number one, create a delusional optimist mindset. At the heart of this is the belief that I can do anything that I set my mind to. Think about it for a minute, how this one belief contributes to our success or to our failure. If we believe it is possible, we tend to work towards it. If we believe it is impossible, we probably don't put the work in. Number two, I love how Ryan talked about building in adversity to his workouts so that he can build up fortitude. Sports or athletics are a great way to do that. I know I've talked about it before on the podcast, but you guys know I'm a cross-country skier, an avid cross-country skier. There are times when I get to the top of a mountain and it scares me to death when I think about skiing down it. I mean, I am terrified. I'm shaking. Sometimes I want to cry. It's scary. But here's the thing. Every time I ski down it, even if I fall, I am building confidence. And finally, number three, start your day with success. I loved Ryan's example of the alarm clock, right? Beating the alarm clock. I've also heard people talk about that's why making your bed in the morning is so important, because it's a win. It allows us to create the momentum early and let that carry us through the day. I hope that you loved this episode as well. If you found it valuable, please hit subscribe, as well as if you'd consider sharing it on your social media. That's a great way to help us spread the message of positivity that we're committed to. So thanks again for tuning into the Unyielded podcast, Thriving No Matter What, where my mission is to provide hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all thrive and we can create the future that we dream of and that we were designed for.